Nothing's planned. It just appears. A pinprick of light, a diamond in the dung heap. Often it's no more than a phrase or a shred of dialogue. In fact, one such arrival formed the beginning of my current piece of work. A handful of words spoken from who knows where that said, "That's an unusual choice. Rare indeed." And I instinctively knew there was something in these few words. Something for me. They were the tip of an iceberg, a murmur from a whole new world moving into my orbit. I had only to pick up a pen and write down this fateful phrase to find the template of a masterpiece already marked out by my subconscious, my writing muse, with love in her eyes, pointing the way to literary paradise. Where could it go wrong? But I'd written nothing yet. I could still turn back. Then the iceberg tilted, and another fragment was loosened from the mass beneath the water. The words in my head were being spoken by a doctor, to my protagonist, whom I'd never met or considered before in all my time in this world, but who might take me over for years if I relented. There was still time to walk away from this, but seconds later, of course, it was too late. There it was, on a post-it note, in irredeemable ink. That's an unusual choice, rare indeed. And whatever future I'd planned for myself was over. Forget about it. This was my future now. The muse, troubled, insistent, began talking in a hurry. The doctor was addressing a woman, someone elderly, wealthy, a widow. He was imparting grave news. Cancer? Or something else? I'd decide on that later. And it would come, because everything would come. A Niagara of words spilling onto the page now. The woman's name, let's say Clara, and the rare choice she was making was to refuse treatment for her illness. She leaves the doctor's office. On a busy street she sees a young man begging for change. Against all her instincts she opens her purse and gives him a tenner. Another tidbit of dialogue comes. "You should get a dog," she says, imperiously. "People like dogs. You get more money." Then she goes home. That night, in bed, watching telly and getting drunk on whiskey, Clara reflects on her apparently pointless life and takes an overdose. But she wakes in the early hours with nothing more than a headache and a sense of utter foolishness. Then there's a noise downstairs. She goes down to find the homeless man has broken into her house. But for some reason, she's no intention of calling the police or anyone. There's another nugget of speech arriving in my head. "You'll smoke outside," she says. "I think that will be fair, don't you?" And she's signalling her unlikely acceptance of this guy, and a strange relationship is about to begin. It took 10 minutes to write all this down. Before it, there'd been nothing. But now, heady with the elixir of creation, I saw the rest of it arriving perfectly formed, to be rattled off in a few weeks, unlike the 5 tortured years I spent on my last hugely ignored novel. This time it would be easy, and it would be perfect. In this hour, I am Dostoevsky reincarnate, Beckett reborn, and I am unstoppable. A year later, there's no more glinting diamond, just the dung heap, in the form of an immense pile of crossed out and scribbled over A4. The original dialogue, those few words of such blinding inspiration, are long gone, and Clara, who became variously Georgina, Hermione, Clarissa of Aquitaine and the Dowager Duchess of Rutland, is now Olivia, wife of an accountant who ditched her for a young actress who'd appeared in a commercial for Oral-B toothpaste. And Olivia has thrown out the homeless young man and taken a lesbian lover, who wants them both to run away to join a nomadic Mongolian tribe. And this thing that came unbidden, but with such promise, has become, well, a pile of old bollocks. The muse has slung a hook to tease and torment someone else, the whore. At my age I should know better, Beware the brain wave, the flash of brilliance. It's just a trick of the light. But how can I give up on this, whatever it is, this book, this willful monster, after all the time I've invested in it? God, who'd write novels for a living? It's not even a living anymore, not by a long chalk. Yet I still call myself a writer. What else am I going to do? To quote Sam Beckett, I can't go on. I'll go on. I'll have to. Another year passes, perhaps a third. Then one evening, not having emerged from my study all day, my better and far wiser half knocks on the door. No answer. She opens it warily. He's probably only drunk. And indeed, there I am, wall-eyed, exhausted, but not dead, nor inebriated, merely insane. And my red eyes shift to the computer screen with its garbled text and blinking cursor. And I say, in a whisper, it was all in that first line. It has to go back. And I get rid of everything and start again. So, there it is. Blind alleys, dead ends, a snarl of unmanageable impulses. How I write. And no, I don't know why I bother either. I just do. That's all.